from KQED's Snap Studios.
This is a tiny plot.
This episode contains strong language and graphic imagery. Sensitive listeners, please take care. Welcome back to A Tiny Plot, a story told in five parts. I'm your host, Shayna Sheely, and this is chapter two. When we left off...
The Shields was awesome.
The residents of Union Point Park defended their encampment against the city of Oakland's eviction order with homemade shields and a barricade of broken toilets and refrigerators. And they sent city cleanup crews back where they came from.
Man, we did something. We accomplished something. Now let's see how much further we could go.
The standoff ended with a handshake between Daryl from the city and President Matt from Union Point Park. A deal to build a new kind of housing community funded by the city, where homeless residents make their own rules, an experimental model called co-governance. But right away, the civility of this agreement seemed to break down. From KQED's Snap Studios, I'm Shayna Sheely. This is A Tiny Plot, Chapter 2, Moving Camp. With huge relief that their hard work had paid off and anticipation for their new life to come, the group took down the barricade, pulling down the couch and the rocks and the toilet.
My arms just felt like they was going to fall off. They were so hot and numb because I couldn't move them no more.
As the sun went down that night, Mama D thought she'd finally be able to relax, to move out of Union Point Park on her own time, peacefully. She and her neighbors slowly started packing up years worth of supplies and equipment and things. Most people weren't ready by the city's move-out deadline. They weren't worried. They had this agreement, a plan to work together. But the morning they were supposed to leave the park, before most residents had even woken up yet.
It was the chaos. It was already in full swing.
The city had blocked off the streets early that morning.
And there was like two dozen police cars and a couple police vans and this armored SWAT team vehicle and like 15 DPW trucks and heavy equipment.
I talked to a lot of people who were here at the park during this eviction. Some said the eviction lasted for days. One person who worked for the city at the time said they never saw an armored vehicle. But the residents all agreed on one thing. They were surprised by the show of force.
I mean, just it had this sinking feeling in my stomach where it was like, oh no.
It was, oh God, like the sounds, it was just like a riot going on. It was so many different voices going on and yelling that you couldn't even hear yourself think.
After that handshake, Daryl left his position with the city of Oakland. The people I spoke with from Union Point said they never saw him again. And this is kind of how it would go. The city was this invisible force, an ever-changing cast of characters, but with the power to make big changes. And when the move-out deadline came around, someone from some department in the city had ordered trucks to come and clear the camp. Mama D told me that most residents were still asleep in tents or cars.
They brought in these weird machines that they stand on, and it's like big giant claws, and munches and crunches and rips and tears, everything in his path.
The claws of them little bobcats or whatever they are, put your stuff in them claws and threw it in a dumpster truck.
They look like langoliers.
Like what?
Langoliers. You ever seen a Stephen King movie? They like eat time, and they have big old teeth, like Pac-Man or something, and they're eating the sky away.
Papa Eddie woke up to the noise. When he looked outside his tent and saw tractors coming his way,
I kept telling him to stop. Fucking stop, man. Just quit. Can't do that.
Mr. Edward Hansen, he was screaming, "You better not touch my stuff. I'm going to kick your, and I'm not playing with you."
I was pulling my hair out, hoping I wouldn't have a heart attack or a stroke.
Papa Eddie walked as fast as he could to guard his most prized possessions.
My barrel's a stick.
His highly finished walking sticks. He spends months on each one.
It's a root of rosemary. It had gold paint.
Eddie stood in front of the barrel of sticks as the bobcat came closer and closer.
Quit! Stop! Quit! Stop!
When the truck got hold of the barrel in between its teeth, a volunteer at the park that day, Judy, she bolted after it.
She was pretty bold. She snatched it right out of the jaw of that thing, man, and yelled at him.
When Eddie got his sticks back, he surrendered the rest of his treasures to Public Works.
I was so tired, I had to sit down. I was afraid I was going to wake myself up into another stroke.
Mama D was also shouting.
Y'all need to get the out of here. Mm-hmm. Don't come back. Get your little bobcat and go. You don't know what they have in there. You don't know if they have somebody's ashes that's deceased. You don't know none of that. So before you start just going in there bulldozing, trying to take charge of people's stuff, let them at least get the chance. Mm-hmm. You know we have a negotiation. Let us clean up.
When city workers showed up, the people at Union Point Park just weren't ready. A lot of them had been living here for years. They said they needed more time. Papa Eddie's hands don't work. But the city had a deadline, and the public works crew continued their sweep. Just weeks after the handshake agreement on top of the barricade, the experiment was in a state of chaos.
I lost my generator. I lost my recycle container. A whole box of antique bottles that I dug up from the shoreline. And it tore us up.
A lot of people living at Union Point Park, from all sorts of backgrounds, peeled off during the days of the cleanup. Others, specifically families with children, many of them Black, were offered placements in transitional family housing. At the end, there were around 15 people who held out at Union Point. And as promised, the city sent someone to help them get set up in motel rooms. Papa Eddie, the founding father of this village, sat on the ground in his socks and watched folks packing up for the motel with their dogs, binders of baseball cards, bags of clothes, whatever they could carry of what hadn't been destroyed. He stayed until everyone was gone, until he was alone, again, looking up at the moon from an empty parking lot.
I just wanted to make sure everybody else, you know, got broke off something, you know.
When he finally got to the motel late that night,
lay down and just relaxed, you know. Had some ice cream, drank some wine.
And he fell asleep. When these 15 or so people checked into their motel rooms at the Travel Inn, about 2 miles from the park, they were a community, bound together by an exodus and a promise.
The first few days of the motel was nobody seen nobody.
When they first got to the motel, everyone was resting, recovering.
Everybody went in, just closed their doors. It was the beds, just being in a warm room. It was awesome.
As comfortable as they were with showers and TVs and beds, the group was at the motel on borrowed time. The city was paying for these rooms, around $100 per night, per person. No one knew how long the city would keep paying for these rooms, or who would be making that decision. Or who from the city would help them find a plot of land to live on, or how long that would take. And as they waited, people seriously moved into their rooms at the Travel Inn.
It's Shayna.
Who?
Shayna, the journalist.
Hey.
I'm at the motel. It's weird because it's in this really expensive part of Oakland, and the street outside is lined with people living in tents and RVs. And like a lot of motels in the city, the motel rooms are filled with homeless people. A lot of shelters don't accept families, so if a family loses their house, motel rooms are sometimes the only way for them to stay together.
I loved my room.
Mama D and the folks from Union Point have been here for over 4 months now. Mama D's room is on the second floor. Her grandkids spend a lot of time here.
No, I don't want it.
She has two queen-size beds.
Yeah, that's my little kitchen over there. I got two microwaves in here. My refrigerator, my son blocked it. But I have this, a two-burner.
Two burners, a slow cooker, a microwave balancing on her toilet lid. Her pantry is stacked with bags of dried beans, mac and cheese, rice, sugar,
jelly, hamburger helper, mashed potatoes,
coffee,
my oatmeal,
coffee,
my flour, barbecue sauce,
barbecue,
and then I have canned foods down here.
And you do your dishes in the bathroom?
Uh-huh. I love this bathroom. This is a lovely shower head.
La 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 la.
Mama D grows two cherry tomato plants she got from Grocery Outlet on the balcony. Mustache Mike knows the closing times of all the neighborhood cafes.
Oh, there's times they give away whole sandwiches, cream cheese on it, smoked salmon on there.
I see him bring back sleeves of bagels to share.
Well, I get every day I can get bagels, fresh bagels.
A woman named Tammy has workout equipment in her room.
So this is for health. It helps with balance, everything. And then, you know, that's a massage table. Brand new massage table.
You got a massage table?
Yeah.
The hotel manager, Sweetie, is keenly aware of just how moved in these folks are.
I just have to call out their names and they'll be there for me.
Mustache Mike helps Sweetie sweep the hallways and Mama D regularly straightens her hair behind the check-in counter.
My hair is really thick and Mama D offered to do it one time now. Every week I tell her, please help me out.
In these months and months of waiting, the group has pretty much settled in at the Travel Inn.
If we forgot that we have things we need to work on in order to be able to be successful, the first thing we had to figure out was, where was our location going to be? How are we going to get this spot? And know that we're not going to be put out of this hotel.
Mama D and the others had a lot of questions about how the experiment was going to come together. How they'd find land, build their village, make their own rules, all in partnership with the city. Especially because, again, the city was this ever-changing figure. A committee here, a new council member there. The actual person this group got answers from was Adam Garrett Clark.
Before you leave this meeting, please either come up here and write your room number.
Adam wasn't a city employee. He had a nonprofit, and the city delegated him to be the official middleman between the city and the Union Point group.
He was definitely always showing up to keep us on track.
All right, Eddie, do you want me to put your jacket and your drinks up at the meeting spot?
Adam is awesome.
Adam's black. He wears clear-rimmed glasses and loves a good neck bandana. One day I meet him, out where he's picking up fried chicken for a group meeting.
Sorry about the mess.
When I climb into his pickup truck for a ride back to the motel, I see that it's loaded with supplies for the group that he's been collecting from Facebook free groups.
Yeah, you'll probably do in your description of this. Like, he's got a straw hat, the printer he found on the street doesn't work, extra pair of work boots.
Adam grew up in San Francisco with a single mom who was a social worker. He was around homelessness often, and he has this strong belief that homelessness can be solved with tiny homes.
The bird's eye view of this is that there's just not enough spots for housing for low-income people. The tiny home community, those are spaces where there's communities and it's affordable, and that's what we need.
Dariel from the city introduced Adam to this group early on, days after that handshake on the barricade. During his visit to the park, Adam told the group about his vision: to build low-budget tiny homes quickly in community. And after the group and the city vetted Adam and his organization Tiny Logic, they accepted him to do this job. After the break, we'll hear more from Adam. This is A Tiny Plot. I'm your host, Shayna Sheely. Stay tuned. Welcome back to A Tiny Plot, Chapter 2, Moving Camp. When we left off, we had just met Adam, who was telling us about his belief that homelessness can be solved with tiny homes. The city gave him a budget of $350,000. The task ahead of him was to help this group build a village, to help them make choices about all the rules of their community, like who'd be able to live there, how they'd keep it safe, about what the space would actually look like, how they'd get plumbing and showers. And here's a key. Adam had to help them figure out how they'd make all these decisions together as a community in cooperation with the city. This is what co-governance is. The city gave Adam a deadline of around 8 months. And every week, he showed up to the Travelin' Motel to lead this group towards their promised land.
Let me know when you guys are ready to listen.
Go ahead.
I am listening. Okay.
All right, so two things. Yeah, you guys want to keep yelling, it's all good.
Yeah, I want to fucking scream.
Since Adam started this job, he's kept a list of things that keep him up at night.
And it's a document that I've kind of started, but just a list of all the worst-case scenarios. There's drive-by shooting. There's stabbing, you know, there's fire. So that's a very serious thing that I think about.
Adam mostly keeps that document to himself. At these motel meetings, he's all optimism.
Yeah, it's part of the game that I got to play is just figure out how I can regulate and be a soothing, downer, de-escalating presence for people.
I don't care what nobody else say.
And let's acknowledge too that Mama D has had a tough couple of days, so it's not
everybody in this mother.
That leap of faith that I was asked to take I'm still mid-leap.
Adam's first task was to help this group find a place to build their community.
The city produced a list of properties. But when you go through the list, you look at all of them and there's always like, well, this is promised to this program or this has this issue.
Some believed that the burden should land in District 5, where Union Point Park was. And Adam actually found a viable piece of city-owned land there. It was a triangular lot and walking distance of Union Point. District 5 was represented by Noel Gallo.
I know Oakland well, and we're trying to change it.
Council Representative Gallo knows this group from Union Point well. He and volunteers from the district used to clean Union Point Park on the weekends.
Picking up rats and all kinds of nonsense. If I didn't pick up like 100-something needles, that wasn't enough. So it got way out of control.
He told me someone he went to high school with was actually killed at the park. He said another morning he went to clean the bathroom and found a young woman dead on the ground.
Laying there, gone.
Gallo did not want this mess in his district.
Well, you know, at that time, we had other goals for that site. It used to be a neighborhood park, and we wanted to restore it to that level.
So and, you did not want this group of Union Point?
No, because then my kids growing up here pay the price.
It just seems like so complicated to try to find an appropriate piece of land.
When we say, appropriateness, would you like me to put everyone in front of your house? How is that? Would you like me to do that? No, hell no. You know, the role of government is to take care of the needy. I understand that. But we also have to have some respect for the children and families. and provide a safe, clean environment. You just can't come here and trash it and drug yourself out and just because, and you want me to feel sorry for you? I don't. I grew up with that kind of city.
The city of Oakland was hemorrhaging money every day on motel rooms. And after months of inaction, the city council president, Nikki Fortunato Bass, put her foot down.
At the time, the thing I had been pushing for was using public land for homeless interventions.
Bass had activist roots, a history of advocating for the homeless. And she knew about this one place the group could go.
It's an incredible parcel of land, and that the fight over how that land would be used really galvanized this movement, public land for public good.
The East 12th Parcel, a plot of land owned by the city right by Oakland's crown jewel, Lake Merritt. Before Bass was a politician, she was part of a protest movement that supported affordable housing on the East 12th Parcel and sought to drive out developers from building condos there. And now that she was in charge, she finally had a plan to use this public land for public good by turning it into a temporary housing site, an emergency intervention for homeless people who lived around Lake Merritt called Lakeview Village.
With space for 65 people on the largest parcel of city-owned land near Lake Merritt.
As Adam became more and more desperate to find this group a home, Bass said she could slice off a piece of land from her project on East 12th for the group from Union Point. Two programs side by side, both devoted to homelessness intervention, but only one would be co-governed.
You know, it was really city staff who said, look, I think we can have these two programs here. And myself and my staff had some concerns about operating two programs side by side that were different. Like, could that really
coexist? So you had
concerns
already.
Oh, yeah, I did. Did the city have the staff and the experience and the leadership needed to help support a successful co-governed encampment? No. No.
And it's my understanding that, like, despite these reservations, you still advocated for using this land for the Union Point group.
Yes. In the end, I acquiesced and said, okay, let's try it. And that was largely because there was nowhere else for people to go. I wasn't going to be the person to say, no, you can't live here and continue to have a dignified existence here in our city.
Finally, an actual plot of land from the city. A slice of the East 12th parcel. Land to build a home for their little village. This felt like a huge win for the group. At least for a few moments. Because that land had ghosts.
I was mad. I was fumed.
More after the break. Stay with us. Welcome back to A Tiny Plot. You're listening to Chapter 2, Moving Camp. I'm your host, Shayna Sheely. When we left off, Mamadi was just learning about the new piece of land for the group's experiment. And she was not happy.
Hey, Papetti, meeting!
It's meeting time at the Travel Inn. One of the first since this group of homeless people has chosen an official name for themselves. Union Point on the Rise.
All right, we got pizza. We got meeting.
You got donuts?
I forgot to get donuts, man.
Also one of the first since Council President Nikki Fortunato Bass has offered a piece of land for their project.
All right, meeting time.
Adam's rallying residents onto the second floor balcony. Some wheel out chairs from their rooms. Others arrange folding chairs into a half circle around this whiteboard.
You got your own pizza?
There are boxes of pizza stacked on the balcony ledge from Adam.
I think we should get started. I'm going to get Mama D.
Mama D is uncharacteristically one of the last people to show up to this meeting. She walks onto the balcony without a word, holding a bright red 7-Eleven slushie.
All right, welcome, guys. We have
have a full house here.
She grabs a seat in the corner and picks up one of the four chihuahuas being passed around. She's pissed, and Adam knows it.
Why don't we jump right in? We had a big question, a big pivotal question from Mama D last week that kind of set everybody off, which is this a true co-governed space?
It's been 7 months since city officials made a promise to help this group build a co-governed model of housing.
So I'm curious to go around the circle like we always do and tell me what co-governed means to you. And then the second is...
Adam goes around the circle, asking each person to define co-governance. Adam once told me that poor people don't often have a seat at the table when it comes to solving problems that impact their own lives. The co-governance model was developed to try and address that root problem.
Rachel, what does co-govern mean to you?
Co-govern, oh God. Co-govern is make sure that like, we have some control, like, you know, what we say goes.
What we say goes.
Control.
Where we get funding and we get guidance through the city. But initially, we decide on our own shit.
Having a say in what's going on, the vote counts.
Oh, yeah.
Adam talks about this metaphor he heard from someone at the city when he first was hired to do this job. Co-governance is like a car where the Union Point residents are the drivers. Adam is the co-pilot, and the city is in the back seat.
The city is in the back seat.
You're the co-pilot.
Co-pilot.
Correct.
The other part of that conversation is the city is buying the car.
Yes, so then, that's a good point.
They're picking the make and model, you know?
Still holding onto a dog, face stony, Mama D blurts out.
And they got their feet on the
brakes.
Gas and brakes.
Yeah. At the same time, brakes.
Yeah, yeah.
For Mama D, it's not just a metaphorical car being jerked around. It's her future.
We are not co-governed because... we are not over there designing our own spot.
I think that if this was truly around co-governance, they would have decided that they wanted to move on East 12th.
They've already decided where we were going to be.
There's a housing rights activist at the meeting today, Nita B. Her graying hair is pulled back into two braids.
Because we had no say so.
My thing is that if, rather than call it a co-governed site, like, be honest. You know what I'm saying? Because all that I witnessed happening is that the city's checking off a box, being like, oh, we had a meeting, check off a box.
At this point in the meeting, Mama D is holding in her rage, arms crossed. She's barely sipped her slushie.
Period. No, ma'am. The site period is an issue for me. And they know this.
Mama D has a big problem with the East 12th Street site.
When we went through this process a couple months ago, it was like, where can we go? We had this one site over in District 5 at the...
You can hear the desperation in Adam's voice. For nearly half a year, he's been calling, emailing, begging city council members and staff for a piece of land to get this experiment going.
We just didn't have a site for a long time. And the thing is, guys, it's like there was, if you remember, if you go back and think about it, you listen to our conversations, there was no place. There was no place for us to go. And then we got this place.
Mama D breaks.
I'd rather go back to Union Point.
I would
because nobody's looking at the big issues here. They're only looking at, we got these houses, but did anybody see their child put in a fucking body bag and have to see that shit every fucking day? No. Yeah. Nobody did. But me. And nobody's giving a fuck about me.
I knew that was going to be a problem.
I did too. So come again with all that shit with me.
You guys are right. You're totally right. I love that this is being recorded. There are a ton of spaces out there. Nita B knows this well, actually. There are a ton of spaces. The issue is that you've got who owns it or who has it.
Okay, try talking and I'm going to talk it out.
Can you hear me crunching on a chip?
Perfect. So I want you to say a little bit more about finding out about getting placed at the 12th Street site. What do you remember from that?
I was heated. My son had just been deceased a year and a half. You know, I kind of like put it in the back of my mind. It's hard. I was like, why would you guys give us a spot where you know my son was murdered?
Kendrick was Mama D's third son. She had six. As a kid, Kendrick was always getting left behind by his siblings.
I used to keep Kendrick so close to me.
Kendrick spent a lot of time with his mom. And when he was in his 20s and had a kid of his own, he came to stay with Mama D at Union Point Park.
Everybody loved Kendrick, just being playful or joking and having fun. Everybody at the park loved him.
Every so often, Mama D would send her kids to a motel for the night to take actual showers. And one night, Kendrick got his things together from his tent at Union Point and went to America's Best Value on East 12th Street. He hugged his 6-year-old son, JC, on goodnight and tucked him in with Mama D.
I was just falling asleep and it was them, and I thought they was playing me. My sister, she said, Deanna, no, somebody got hurt.
Mama D went to East 12th Street. Kendrick had been shot 13 times in the parking lot.
When I got there, they wouldn't let me go see my son. That was the most hurtful. Just knowing my son was on that ground and somebody would kill my son like that. The police, the coroner's office came and picked him up, and I seen him put my son in a bag. I couldn't sleep for I didn't get no sleep for 4 days. It felt like time was stopped.
The piece of land on East 12th Street that the city gave this group. If you stand anywhere on the plot, you can see straight to the entrance of America's Best Value Inn, where Kendrick was killed. Like, it's feet away, right across the street.
It's too much for a mother to have to go through being told where she's going to live. And then it's right there where your son was murdered.
How do we move forward on this? Because we have this space, we have some people that want to move in.
You know, you can't file a...
But back at that meeting, when Mama D erupted in anger, all Adam could do was try to save this experiment.
Now, as far as Deanna's situation... Tim.
Nita B, the activist, she raises her hand again.
I just want to lift up, the trauma that Deanna is talking about. I just think about the fact that every day... She literally has to see the place. Whew.
Her and her family.
Right. And that they need to find another spot because this community wants to stay as a community, but one of their members, if not all of them, because at some point they were all touched by Kendrick's life, but that his family has to actually be in proximity of where he was shot down. And that's freaking crazy to me.
I think the city should offer her another option so that it's kind of maybe close so that she could still come to meetings and we could still coordinate.
I don't want them to offer me nothing else but where my community that we started is going to be together.
You see, that's what I'm trying to say is we're all together. We're all going to go to a different site.
If Mama D isn't going to East 12th, none of them go.
No, they disbanded a lot of communities.
Yeah,
exactly. Like us. They disbanded them. They moved them here, there. They tried that in the beginning, separating us from the economy.
From 2021 to 2024, the city of Oakland closed more than 537 homeless camps and cleared hundreds more, separating communities. If there's one thing this group believes, it's if they separate, they lose. So, just when this group is so close to their dream, when they get an actual piece of land, free, to build their own co-governed home, they decide they are not willing to risk breaking up the group. They say they aren't going to East 12th without Mama D.
Are we collectively rejecting the moving in?
Let's just march back on Union Point and just fucking buckle down here. You know what I'm saying? We're ball and chain ourselves.
It's kind of like they're back to square one, threatening to resist the city because they don't want to be separated.
I say we need to go back to Union Point and motherfucking chain ourselves to the fucking ground. Right?
I didn't know that they all felt like if I didn't go, that they wasn't going to go. And that just made me see the love that they have for me as family, not friendship, but family. And we would let nobody break us apart.
Adam breaks down empty boxes. On the wall behind them is a blueprint mock-up for the East 12th site, a timeline to move out of the motel by the end of this month. But for now, on the travel-in balcony, President Matt disassembles the dry erase board. Others fold up chairs. Mama D takes her melted slushie back to her room and locks the door behind her. You just heard the second episode of Snap Studios' original series, A Tiny Plot. There's more. Over the next few weeks, we'll be releasing episodes here on the Snap Judgment feed on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Don't miss it. Next up on A Tiny Plot.
Deanna, you can do this. You can't. I'm not going to do this. I don't want to see my. I don't want to relive this every day.
It's hard enough to do what we're doing. We're dealing with the layers of people dealing with the trauma of transitioning from survival mode on the streets, and then we got to layer on top of this like weird political football. You know, it's like setting a grenade, you know, in a pile of wood.
A Tiny Plot is a production of KQED Snap Studios, hosted and produced by Shayna Sheely, edited by Anna Sussman. Original music by Renzo Gorio. Made possible by the entire Snap team and everyone who lived at Union Point Park. Thank you for sharing your stories. Extra special thanks to Jen Chen, Catherine Winter, the City of Oakland, Sweetie at the Travel Inn, Ryan Finnegan, Will Kraft, J.P. Dobrin, Thomas Browns, Suki Lewis, Alistair Boone and the Street Spirit, Otthouse Audio, the entire cast from Union Point Park, and KQED Legal. Engineering by Pat Macedi Miller. Director of Production, Marissa Dodge. Executive Producers, Glenn Washington and Mark Ristich. On Team Snap, the union-represented producers, artists, editors, and engineers are members of the National Association of Broadcast Employees and Technicians, Communications Workers of America, AFL-CIO, Local 51. And this is not the news. No way is it the news, because this is Snap Judgment. Get your ears ready and keep your hearts open, because this is PRX.